Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sunderland won 2-1 yesterday against Bristol Rovers at a very cold and miserable stadium alight. It was horrible rain, ice rain. Never seen anything like it. It was like shards of glass falling, hitting you on the face. But before we talk about that with Simon O'Rourke.
It's O'Rourke.
I know it is, but
it's the third time I've been on.
I know.
And you haven't got that right yet.
No, I got it right first time. Simon O'Rourke. I just call you O'Rourke for the banter. And we've got Christopher Cam also here.
Hello, hello. For Chris, for letting me be told off. Call us Christopher. Or Christoph, if you use my email.
But before we get going, we've got to do a quick little bit of business. So the Foundation of Light, as you know, is a sponsor of the Rogue Report podcast. And we are very proud to sponsor the community, I suppose it's a community charity, isn't it? It's got fireside courts, it's got cafe in there, it's got a barn on the top where you can play football as well. I think that's a 9-a-side. But we've teamed up to give you £10 off your first five-a-side pitch booking, which works out at just £3 per player. If you want to take advantage of that, call 0191 563 4818 and quote the code ROKERREPORT. And while I've also got you here doing business, the Lake Poets are coming on the podcast. And as we know, they are running towards being, I don't know, number one at Christmas. Is that the aim?
Just get them as high up as we can, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. We've got them coming on the podcast and we think it would be nice if you bought their song Shipyards, which is featured on Sun Until I Die. And probably the best bit of the series is actually the initial intro, and that's nothing against the series. I just love what they've done.
It's good, isn't it? I like the song as well.
Yeah, it's a good song.
I love the Lake Poets. Great guy.
Well, yeah. Buy it. I think it's 79 pence, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not much. Done that. Oh, I've also got to do some podcast shout-outs because I promised anybody who guessed the score correctly yesterday on Twitter would get a shout-out. There were a lot of 5 and 6 nils predicted. A lot of very confident people yesterday. But well done to, how many was there? There was 1, 2, 3, 4, there was 5. So Jamie McNally, Patrick McCann, Lou SCFC, Harry Cook and Sam 05 SCFC. So you take my admiration for 2-1. I had 2-0. Disappointing. Such is life. So to the game. Sunderland lined up McLaughlin, Oviedo, but James was meant to start. He got injured in the warm-up. Baldwin, Leuvens coming in for Flanagan, the Welsh Cafu at right back, and Katz, Power, Gooch, Honeyman, McGeady, Madja, and Bristol Rovers took the lead on 10 minutes through Rodman. It was terrible defending, but we'll talk about that later. Equalised through Adam Matthews as he headed in a McGeady rebound from close range just on half time, and half time came too early because we would have scored pretty much soon after if that had continued the way it was. Second half, we were dominant, but we really lacked a cutting edge. But McGeady had that one bit of quality, played a Madja, who did that lovely bit of skill, as he always seems to do in the box. Takes his chance. I've wrote brilliantly, but it was bad keeping, wasn't it? But 2-1, and then we hit the bar and the post in one move through Power and Maguire. Then Bristol Rovers nearly got an equaliser and added time as they hit the bar. So first place to start. Simon, who was your man of the match?
I think it was one of those days, probably because of the conditions. I don't think anyone massively stood out. McGeady for the little flashes of skill. I also thought that the gentleman who normally gets 6 out of 10 in your reviews, Mr. Honeyman, had a very good, solid game yesterday.
Seven
as well.
An 8?
Very good. I thought it was a good captain's performance yesterday. He did the bits and pieces that were necessary on a grubby, nasty sort of day.
Do you think he's been getting better recently, hasn't he? I think over the last 6 weeks he's getting...
Nah, he's confident now.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He seems to be growing.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a strut about him just at the minute, which is nice to see.
He tries things as well. Every time he got the ball, he would turn and touch and go forwards and immediately put their back four on the back foot, and it didn't always come off, and he did sometimes lose the ball, but I don't mind it if you're trying it. So it's good.
And I've enjoyed how good he is tackling at the minute. His tackling's been phenomenal. Like slide tackles and all sorts. And the amount of times he rode challenges yesterday and came out with the ball, I'm like, you know what, Honeyman? You deserve a 7.
That boy is 7.
I mean, it's kind of like a Christmas present for him, isn't it? It's really nice at this time of year that you'll go above the 6.
I think we should get him like a little like glass trophy with like a 9 written on it. Yeah. I don't know.
And just say like, oh, we made your trophy, but they built it upside down.
And then he can turn it. He can turn it upside down when he has a normal 6. But now Honeyman was great. I actually thought McGeady probably manned the match just simply because he created the first goal and then the pass for Madja. I mean, the guy who sits behind me, he was like, what are you doing not passing it to Oviedo? And then obviously he plays at Magic.
Imagine when he bangs it in.
Yeah, I thought McGeady probably deserved man of the match.
He's a permanent mismatch. When he's on his game, in League One, he is a permanent mismatch against whichever fullback he's up against. It must be an absolute nightmare. Premier League and Championship fullbacks might be good enough to cope with him. In League One, they're just not. And it must be an absolute, it must do their heads in. Because it's not a question of is he going to beat you, it's which side he's going to beat you.
Yeah, how's he going to do it?
And are many players at this level both footed as him? Because he's literally both. He doesn't know what he is.
Josh Madja. He's about as both footed. He shoots with both feet just as well as he does the other one.
Yeah.
I think that's one of my favourite things about him. We've got another one on loan, and Embleton, who's got both feet as well. We're pretty spoiled. Maguire, he's 2 goals in the month with different feet. We're just such a technically good football team for the level, right? It's great. I'm just excited.
This is a fantastic ambidextrous update.
Yeah, it is. I know. Ambidextrous. Yeah.
Any more, Chris? Any more players?
Adam Matthews is fairly ambidextrous.
Yeah,
I'm going to throw him some love as well. He was my man of the match. I just think he's just playing with so much confidence. You could see after he scored his goal, he was like flicking it over his head in his own edge of his own area. He's passing the ball brilliantly, like 2 assists to the outside of his boot this season. Love that.
It was good to see him score. He kind of, that's not what fullbacks are there for, really, is it? But he's deserved a goal. He has been very good.
He was sort of, I think he was a part of the build-up, but then ball went over the other side and he just pushed their fullback back and their winger back. And I think eventually their winger left him, so he just went into the box. He just followed the ball in. Like,
I love the fact that he's somehow just got so much pace now. I can't remember him being that pacey.
The one thing, wasn't it him that got caught fannying on when they nearly scored at the end?
And that was a little bit of his confidence being there. he's not actually that good.
That's why he's in League One. He'll take the rough with the smooth. So we are talking about Matthews, but we may as well talk about the back four now. So 2 changes, Flanagan out, obviously.
Yeah, so Reece James injured in the warm-up.
It's like Reece Oxford, like, no, we're not him. No, Reece James, injured in the warm-up. But did we look as sturdy yesterday? I think first 15 minutes we definitely didn't.
No, I didn't think they did all the way through, to be honest. I mean, there was that awful sitter that Bristol Rovers missed in the first 5 minutes from the free kick, where that was just absolutely down to miscommunication. Now, they're only human. The whole last-minute replacement thing probably would have thrown them a bit. Leuven's obviously being in after a long time when they've had a settled back 4, back 5 did make a difference. But you always felt that there was a mistake in them yesterday from the first minute to the 95th minute because that would have been an awful equaliser to concede at the end. But when we sort of look in sort of the big picture of yesterday, just getting the win was the thing. But no, in answer to your question, I don't think they looked as sturdy at all.
I think there's a couple of sort of qualifiers for that performance. You've got to think the weather was genuinely an effect on the game. I think both sides struggled with it. And then you've got to say, like, when Flanagan and Baldwin played their first 3 or 4 games together, they looked shaky. Their communication wasn't great. It's just, I think it's a simple mixture of the weather, Leuven's just coming back, and the fact that Baldwin and Leuven's haven't played together in ages. So you've just got to build it all up from scratch again, really.
I found it interesting that when we played midweek that he didn't think about maybe giving Leuven's and Ozturk, because I think if Leuven's or Ozturk, depending on which one he went with, obviously he went with Leuven's, but if he gave them a bit of game time, like in the Checker Trade games, you know, in the FA Cup games, then he might not have looked as rusty. Like throwing him in today when he hadn't really played, I think he played that game at Morecambe and that was really it. I just felt maybe that lack of rotation could have come to bite them in the rear.
Yeah, I think Jack Ross, who I'm very impressed with, has done most things right. And I think he affects games well. His substitutions are interesting and that sort of thing. One thing I would slightly quibble with was the Walsall game. I think he might have gone a bit more checkatrade with his team selection on that. Maybe changed a few more people. They did look tired. It was flat. I know we're not talking about that game, but that's one thing. I would have maybe changed three or four more for that game.
Yeah, you didn't know if you wanted to win it or not. It's like your team selection says you do, but your players' attitudes doesn't
I think
at all.
Ending the game with all nine at right back and Mumba on the right wing. Like it's too. I hear people who, well, I don't hate strong word. I don't like it when managers play people out of position. I just think you're asking, like when you played Mumba right back for the checker trade game, it's like he's young. He's getting in the team. Why would you play him out of position?
Well, that kind of is his position a lot of the time. Mumba has played out there a lot.
No, but you had him at right back for the checker trade against.
He's sort of right wing back, wasn't it? Where he had that entire right hand side.
I just think sometimes just play him in the position that they're most comfortable in when they're young.
Yeah.
And I thought the same with 09. Like 09, on the fringes of the team, played at right back against Walsall. Didn't look great because he's playing at right back. And you're like, well, now he's back down the pecking order. He didn't even get on yesterday.
It's tough for Mumba though, because where do you give him game time? Because he's physically not big enough to play in centre midfield in League One. As good as he is technically, you want to develop his body first before you can really trust him to go into challenges, win 50-50s. Like he looks like when he's on the ball, that if a fully grown man came up and tried to take the ball off him, it would be dead easy for them. The reason he gets away with it is because he's so technically good and he's fast with his feet, he can turn and avoid trouble, but...
I don't know, maybe he can do with
strength,
potential loan spell out.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think at his age, 17, like you can't expect too much, even if you put
him on. It's not worried about his performance right now.
No. So midfield balance yesterday, the Bristol Rovers game. What did you think of the midfield balance?
You talked about central midfield?
Yeah.
I thought Cattermole looked really rusty. I'm glad he got the 90 minutes in with one. I'm glad it didn't cost him anything, but I thought he just... His passing was a bit off. He looked slow. He looked quite sluggish. And I think I sometimes wonder if him and Max Power can actually play together.
I find Max Power was very quiet as a result of Cattermole being alongside him.
And neither of them were also doing what they actually do quite a lot and pick the ball up at the centre-backs. They weren't going back to pick the ball up the centre-backs as much as what McGeoch does. And I sometimes think if you play McGeoch with them, he does a lot of the quiet stuff.
Yeah.
And it helps them express themselves a little bit more. And I just wonder... Obviously, Cattermole's fitness is going to come into it, but I just wonder if they're made to play together.
Well, I agree. That was why I raised the point, really. I didn't think it worked particularly well yesterday. But again, as we've touched on, I think you've got to put the qualifiers in from yesterday. He was just coming back after a longer than expected layoff. It was a horrible day as well. And that made it a pretty horrible game as well. So perhaps it's not fair to judge it. But it did strike me that they're sort of occupied, they want to occupy the same space, they want to do the same things, and whether it's quite the balance, I'm not sure.
You see Power sort of deviated at Cattermole, like Cattermole take up control in times where Power's got this amazing ability to pick up the ball and fire a 30, 40 yard pass, like a bullet into someone's feet at a moment's notice. But then he's not doing that, he's giving it up for Cattermole, and it's like, do you lose a dynamic to the team? Like perhaps Cattermole or Power can drop and then Honeyman can come a bit deeper and Maguire can go higher up the pitch if you want to do a attack.
I've enjoyed the Power-Honeyman partnership. I think Honeyman in that central midfield, not in behind the striker, in central midfield, actually, I think that's possibly his best position at this level. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's fair or not, and I don't know if that's me just because I love Honeyman so much. But
also, this and things we might go on to discuss file under the heading of nice problems to have.
Yeah definitely.
Which is the good thing, obviously, about Sunderland's season at the minute.
And he also had no other option yesterday because McGeoch was... I don't even think he was on the bench initially, was he?
Well, he was the one who came onto the bench as a result of Reece James.
So he was never going to play, was he?
Yeah, not fit. So, I mean, he didn't actually have any other option other than playing Mumba or 09, and he wasn't going to do that. So I think yesterday he was kind of... I don't know if he would have played Cattermole the full game if he had a full complement in midfield.
It sounds really simple, but if the weather was better... Do you think he might have played like 09 or Mumba with somebody with a little less experience?
I don't know. The weather was horrible though.
Exactly. Maybe.
It's annoying because it sort of removes any comment you can have on the game, isn't it? Because it's like...
But I think it actually is. It is the whole, oh, footballers, boo-hoo, it's raining, get out, you get paid, go and play football. It was a beast of a day. Yeah. It wasn't awful.
It was more
than
rain.
It was freezing. And you think, I had like four layers on in the press box and they're out there wearing shorts and all right, everyone's got their Under Armour top on and sorry, other tops are available, but you know, they've got their top under the strip and their strip and they're out in the middle of the rain and it's freezing it was horrible.
Did you actually feel the rain?
No, because I was under the cover.
It wasn't, no, so when I left the you probably would have stayed because you would have had like a tea or something up there for free in the press box.
No, I was doing my job and filming.
No, but when I left the ground and I was walking around the stadium, the rain was like glass. because it was sort of semi-frozen, and the way it was going out was actually hurting. It felt like little shards of, it felt like, you know, the Lord above was throwing glass at us as I was walking down. And I was like, if that was happening on the pitch, I wouldn't be able to play.
But it's far. I mean, I've got a completely different view on the game today than I had yesterday at full time. Yeah, I was a little bit snarky at full time. Didn't think it was a good game. Didn't think it was a good performance, that sort of thing. The more I think about it, I think that's a great 3 points. Because they had to dig it out on a horrible day. They didn't play great. Bristol Rovers had that sort of new caretakery managery type bouncy thing about them. They gave it a good old go. And on a day when Portsmouth dropped more points, that's a great result yesterday.
That's the thing. You've got to look at, like, you zoom out and have a look at all the results that have taken place. Portsmouth have struggled the last two games. What was one loss, one draw this week?
Yeah, and then they've got us at the weekend. This could be their sticky little period. I think the fact that they've dropped 5 points over the last two, and then they come to play us and they'll be like, oh, well, will a point be a good result? And you can start getting
in. It is interesting, but I wouldn't start hanging the bunting out and saying they're going to fall away, because the two teams played, Charlton and Barnsley.
Barnsley outplayed them at one point.
You know, we were probably all at the Barnsley game a couple of weeks ago. Barnsley look a very good team, and Charlton's league position, and that tells you they're decent
as
well.
They were good at Sunderland. Yeah.
And what you can say is there are two teams that we have beaten at home, so...
Yeah,
that's a positive we can take going into this game. Thing, like, listen, we're coming up against these guys who look so good in the league, but we're in the position where we can go, well, we've actually beaten the two teams that they've struggled against recently, so they are, you can get at them if you play attacking the way Barnsley do. They're such a attacking based team. Like, why can't we just do that and put them under the cosh from the first whistle?
Oztek. So I want to talk a tiny little bit about just a change.
Okay then.
Before left field.
Yeah, but do you think in January he could possibly go, because he's barely played, and do you think they'll replace him? Because I have a feeling that centre-back's going to be somewhere the recruit, and I think he's the odd man out. I don't think they're going to buy another one and not get rid of one.
I don't know. I mean, they've all been injured at some point this season. There's been one guy out, so I don't know why you would let one go.
No, let one go and bring one in.
Well, if you're going to do that, I don't particularly see him leaving. I mean, you've got to... certainly in a league like this, you've got to run four centre-backs minimum in your squad, haven't you?
No, if they're going to bring a centre-back in, I think they're going to bring a centre-back in.
I still think if you bring one in, that means we'll have five. I still think you don't let Oztek go, because Flanagan isn't really a centre-half. He's a right-back.
I don't think he's ever going to play right-back.
Where's he going to go, though?
Oztek.
Yeah.
I don't know, back to Turkey or something. That's Stuart Donald. And
that was very Brexit of you, Conor.
As you say, he's not pulled up any trees. So
it's been hopeless.
You know,
really?
His dance card may not be full in January.
Has he had enough of a chance, do you reckon?
I don't know if he has, but I think clearly he's not fancied.
If he's not fancied, that's fair enough, but he will eventually get a chance to play. You've got to assume at some point a couple of games in a row, and it's up to him. That if he has those two games and he's still crap, then fair enough.
It's all right. Also, as well, sometimes it's easy to say that, you know, manager doesn't fancy him and that sort of thing. I think the more accurate way of putting it is that the manager has settled on a centre-back pairing that he prefers.
I think that's more the case.
But I don't know. Strange on that.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Threw it out there, left field. We did talk about the midfield. You took that away from us, Simon. It's about to talk about Catmull there. McLaughlin obviously got injured yesterday. I think it was back spasms, so he shouldn't be out too long, should he? I've had a back spasm myself.
He looked very uncomfortable.
The general crack afterwards was that they're reasonably confident that he'll be all right for Portsmouth, that kind of thing. It was, I think, precautionary as much as anything else. There wasn't a big song and dance about it in the press conference afterwards. I mean, it's a bit of a worry, obviously, and, you know, let's be honest, the whole mood of the stadium changed when Robin Poyter took his tracksuit bottoms off and jogged out to stand between the posts. But no, I think McLaughlin, hopefully for Sunderland, will be all right next week.
I actually have trust in Reuter now. I've seen him play a few times this year, and I was like, I think last year we've all seen the Netflix series. We've seen how bad it was behind the scenes. It wasn't a good environment to play.
Oh, they had that low shot in the goal. They must have had a GoPro in where he dropped the free kick from Millwall. That was awful.
I remember. I wasn't there for that one. I watched it on Soccer Saturday. And there's that bit at the end where they just, like, Jeff Stelling was talking through the game and he showed the three goals and they were in absolute hysterics. So I was just sat there, like, shaking my head. It's like,
I dropped two clangers and ours did.
It's just the worst.
Reuter, having said that, let's not turn it into a attack Robin Reuter session, but Reuter made a mistake yesterday and got away with it because he was in two minds whether to come when the lad hit the bar in the last second, and he did, and it was the wrong decision, and he got away with it because he hit the bar.
Fair
enough.
I haven't actually seen the thing.
He kind of checked his run, then he thought, yes, I'm going to go. And it was the wrong decision, because if he'd stayed on his line, there isn't a problem, basically. And he got away with it.
Well,
put that down to lack of game time.
Again, fair enough. Yeah.
Give him benefit of the doubt.
Is it worrying that we aren't dominating against, well, quote unquote, bottom feeders at home? You know, we've played a lot of the poorer sides this year, and I think Wickham, they got a point. Oxford haven't been great this season. They got a point. Yesterday, fortunate probably to get the win.
Nah.
Is it worrying?
No.
It's a function of the unique nature of the season. Everyone raises their game. It's everyone's weekend mini break away when they come to the stadium alight. League One jobbers don't get to play in stadiums like that very often. And it just is. Everyone seems to raise their game when they come to the stadium alight. It's been a constant conversation point with the manager and press conferences this season, and it's just true. The Wickham one you mentioned, their manager, what's his name?
Gareth Ainsworth.
That's right. Who came across very well afterwards. But he was talking about it like he was visiting Buckingham Palace in the press conference afterwards. Yep. He was so reverential about the place.
He was on BT Sport the week before for the Port Vale game, and he was just saying, like, listen, we're here scouting, fair enough, but we're going to turn up and play it with the same intensity as this FA Cup game.
Yeah.
And he was saying that everyone's face is like, yeah, we all know it's going to happen. What are we supposed to do to stop it? Like, that's the question.
And that every team that's coming there, but strangely enough, the possible exceptions might be the likes of Barnsley and that sort of thing, who are used to going to places like that. But it's just a function of it. And also, I think it's the nature of the league. It's the nature of the team that Jack Ross is building at the moment as well, that they don't, apart from spells in games, they don't necessarily dominate. But I've changed my opinion on that as well. I hope you come in here and say, oh, there's so much more for Sunderland to do. They're going to get better and better. And I don't think they're the finished article. And whilst I still think that's true to an extent, they've lost once in 20 games in the league.
That's remarkable at whatever level you're playing at.
It's time for people like me to be, give them a bit more credit for not what they could be, but for what they actually are.
They could, at the minute I was looking, if they won the games in hand, when Elliot 23 games, they could be getting, they're on about 100 point pace at the minute. And, you know, we're not griping really, but there is still a few gripes, you know, the fact that I brought that we haven't been dominating against lower sides. But I think you're right in the sense that everyone does seem to raise their game. I mean, Bristol Rovers, first 15 minutes yesterday, ran their heart out. They didn't really do anything the rest of the game, but the first 15 minutes, they got their goal.
And it's no coincidence we're coming back to win games. We're coming up against teams who are coming flying out the traps, absolutely like playing us off the park for the first half an hour. And then towards the end of the game, come the 60th, 70th minute, they're all knackered and we're winning the game 2-1. It's happening that way.
You're absolutely spot on, Chris, because yesterday, and teams have done this at the stadium light especially, they did a high press for the first, certainly, to start off with. It was a massive high press on Sunderland because they know that Ross likes them to play out from the back and that sort of thing. So they press very high. But they're not good enough or fit enough in League One to keep that up for 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it's just the reality, isn't it? We saw Watmore come back yesterday. Came from the first league start since he got injured last year. I think it was possibly the Millwall game he got injured that we were talking about before. Could have got a man sent off there. Interesting to hear whether or not you believe that was a red card for the Bristol Rovers man. Probably didn't make a difference in the grand scheme of things, but was it?
I think it was too far away. I know he's quick, but it was, had it been 10 yards further on, definite case for a red card, but it was just over the halfway line.
I'd give benefit of the doubt the defender covering as well.
Yeah,
so
and because there's that much ground to cover, that you'd think that somebody will get back.
I know it sounds pedantic, but I know it is last man, but if you think about it, like Watmore was like on the sideline running towards goal and their covering defender was in the centre of the pitch.
Yeah, so he would have.
So he would have got there. It's a shorter distance for the defender to cover, if you know what I mean? It would have been a harsh red card, but you could have given it as well.
It was a strange thing because there was, whilst I know fans like the whole sense of injustice thing when that sort of thing happens and the red card doesn't come out, I felt at that moment there was also quite a big element of relief because at that point they'd hit the bar and you thought, right, that's it.
Yeah,
it will be full time in 10 seconds and Sunderland are going to win the game. So as well as that, should that have been a red card, there's, oh, thank God for that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, the only reason why I thought it could have been a red card, I actually don't think it was, but I thought the referee might have thought, number one, the tackle was really bad. It was a bad tackle. And number two, there's also the professional foul element to it. So if that tackle happens in the middle of the park, it's a yellow card. The fact he was stopping a guy running in technically would make it two yellow cards.
It was their number 8, wasn't it?
Oh, I've got no idea.
I think it was their number eight. I can't remember exactly what moment it was earlier in the game, but I think he should have already been booked at that point. So you could make the case it could have been his second yellow, but the referee refereed it in such a way that no one would have got booked for it. There's a couple of occasions he was like grappling with Honeyman and he pulled people down. And
the weird ones, those, they're quite, even with the law, I think for referees they're quite subjective, because there was the Yedlin one for Newcastle the other week, and also last week Besic got sent off for Middlesbrough, and both were similar sort of pulling back, that kind of thing. Was there cover, was there not cover? And those two got red cards, but those decisions could have gone the other way as well.
Yeah, it's one of those you can't really be... You're annoyed if you're on the other end of it, simply. There's no like 100% agreement on one of those. Definitely not.
And last thing really I want to talk about the game. Actually, there's two things. But the first thing is Maguire came on yesterday. And I didn't think he looked his usual self. I don't know if that was just me. I just thought he looked a bit lethargic.
Was he not back from injury after the last game? Or did he play against Walsall?
There was the one where he went out in the warm-up, didn't he? And he got taken out. He might be carrying something. Yeah. He didn't look
hit the post
quite the way that he can be. He did, as you say, hit the post. I think it's the nature of cult hero players like Chris Maguire that there'll be peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fair enough comment, but I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, he was consistent. The level he's been at when he's been his best, if he was consistently that level, he wouldn't be in League One. So
it was a shame that Power's effort didn't go in as well.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah.
Absolute screamer.
I was annoyed at him for the second one. It's like, fair enough, you've just hit the bar, but they need to be shooting from like 40 yards out. Yeah. He wasn't anywhere near.
And McGeady actually, who, you know, your man of the match, fair enough, but the one at the end, if he kept his head up, he just needed to
give it a what more? Fairy tale.
I think one thing I'd say about McGeady there is against Southend the other week, he scored the same shot, essentially the same sort of move. Uh-huh. So I think he was thinking and he said, well, I scored last time I was in this position.
But against Barnsley, he squared it for 0-9. He did the right thing.
Mm. Well, next time then he's going to pass it, isn't he?
I think you've got to look at it in the sense that, McGeady... he was within his rights to shoot, but then if you look at where Watmore's position was on the pitch, it would have been an easier chance for Watmore had he got the pass to him right. So in that sense, you've made the wrong decision. But obviously, in hindsight, if McGeady had scored, then, it was a great decision. Or if he passed it or Watmore missed, then, why'd you pass it? It's one of those hindsight ones, isn't it?
Go back to that Michael Chopra one all them years ago where he passed it and he should have shot it, you know?
Go back to it, the one. Three points. Forget the detail. They won. Goes down in the history books. Portsmouth didn't win. Sunderland did.
The final thing about the game yesterday is actually a little bit of a rant, I would say. Because I sit in the north west corner. And the people around me, and probably some of them are listening to this, and it's no real offence, but I just wanted to make the point, complaining about like everything in the game. So like Josh Madger, 19, scores goals. And yet people whinge about his hold of play, the whinge that he doesn't run the channels, the whinge that, you know, sometimes maybe his touch isn't what they would like. And yet he goes and he needs the ball 20 yards out and he'll score a goal. And people are complaining. Same thing with Honeyman. So Honeyman's another one. No matter what happens in a game, if he loses the ball, people complain. Just relax. But pretty much on track to be top of the league. Let we play. It's not going to be great. We're in League One. We're not going to play a brilliant game of football. It's not the Premier League. We are going to make mistakes. We've got a lot of young players, you know, Gooch, Honeyman, Madger. You can say a lot of them. A lot of the players, just very young, very raw. Just enjoy it. Like, don't get angry. Just go to the game. Enjoy it. If we get beat, it's not happened yet at home this season. Get beat, shout at the players. But when it's a game like yesterday, the conditions, the way it was, just relax. Like, just don't get on the players' backs. We're in a good place, new ownership, new manager, players that were like, just let it go.
What gets my back up is the fans who 2 years ago complained that the players on the pitch weren't playing for the shirt and weren't running and weren't trying, but they were like technically excellent. And now we've got players who are running their hearts out, will do anything for Sunderland, dive in front of any shot, run in any weather, because they've like miscontrolled that ball once in 90 minutes and they get absolutely slayed. It's like, what are you supposed to do?
There's people around me who don't let the players finish, and that's what irritates me. If the ball goes out of play and it's a bad touch, then I can forgive it a little bit. But the players aren't finished and they're complaining that they've not played a pass. Yesterday, the prime example was Madger's goal. McGeady doesn't play to Oviedo, which is like the obvious pass. If he plays it at Madger, who gets in one-on-one and scores, it's like, don't have a go until the player's finished, until you've seen what he's going to do. Because, to be honest, McGeady knows that damn sight more about how to play football than you in the crowd. Just let them play.
It's perfectly fair enough. I come from a similar position to what you were both saying there. But you enjoy football how you enjoy it, don't you? So if actually you want to go to a game of football to rant and rave and have a go, you're perfectly entitled to that.
That's why Connor has a podcast.
That's true. I came on here. I didn't say them in the ground. I just let them go and whisper things to
my
friend.
So they're not breaking the law?
No. Absolutely I never not. Said that, though. No, I just think sometimes fans need to appreciate the fact we're in League One and we're not going to see perfect football. And we just need to sort of help the players and not get on their backs.
Ultimately as well, though, they're there as well. Like yesterday, particularly, they're there in the worst conditions of the season so far. But the fans are as well. You know what I mean? Like, the fans are there, still 28,000 in the stadium. So
podcast host, Slate, Sunderland supporters. Nah, 99% of them are really good.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to get that out there. And well done to the Bristol Rovers fans.
Wasn't that a great turnout from them in December?
Brilliant.
Well, I'm really impressed with that.
Yeah, I was too. Everyone has been this year. I bet the away end turnout this year has been higher than what we used to get in the Premier League. Because every team seems to bring up a big end.
How many Chelsea fans are going, I really fancy that trip to Sunderland?
We always used to play them midweek as well.
Yeah, I did actually.
Talked a little bit about Portsmouth, but I want to go back to it now. How do we tackle it? Is a point good enough?
Yeah, it is. It is good enough. But I don't think that's how Jack Ross will approach the game. I think he'll go and try and win it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's his nature as a manager.
Oh, I can't see Jack Ross ever going, we're going to settle for the draw today.
Uh-huh.
He just can't do it.
I want to see power in midfield with Honeyman being deeper, and then you can have Gooch, Maguire, McGeady and Madger all up front.
That's just the team, I'd
be. Yeah, Maguire and Madger can play off each other, and then you just let the other two do whatever they do and then attack from the outset.
Catamol, not the sort of game you'd want Catamol playing?
Yes, to an extent, but earlier discussion, I don't know whether that balance is quite right. Although having two attack dog type players might be what you want in that game, I don't know. But for me, maybe not. Both.
To be fair, I've not done the same level of analysis of Portsmouth that Jack Ross will have done.
That's true.
Uh-huh. And I don't see what Lee Cattermole looks like in training every week, which is a point I made in our group chat. Was obviously Cattermole looked off the pace, so why did Jack Ross pick him? It's like, well, because he's been watching him train all week, so obviously he's not been until
no real other options.
Yeah, it's so true.
And Luton, how worried are we about Luton? Because Luton just seem like they keep winning at the minute.
They were the hipster's pick at the start of the season, weren't they? That was the word on the street.
Well, the record demands respect, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They've got, I'm looking at the table, scored a lot of goals. The goal difference, Sunderland have got the best goal difference, but they've got the second best goal difference, I think, Luton.
Yeah, but so just one goal behind.
Yeah, so they score a lot of goals and their home form is
good.
We got
a point.
But again, I was just going to go on to that. It's one of those, with hindsight, certain results look better or worse later on in the season, don't they? And that point at Luton, when everyone was getting a bit pissy about being in League One in the early days and that sort of thing, look at that, 1-1 at Luton. And now, doesn't look bad at all, does it?
No, I think Luton are going to be... I thought it was going to be us, Portsmouth and Barnsley. I think it's us, Portsmouth, Luton. I do think us and Portsmouth will pull
away. You're just picking the top three in the league every time you make this prediction,
yeah,
then.
Pretty much it. Yeah, but Barnsley really came off the pace. I think they're out the playoffs now.
Yeah, they were eighth.
Yeah, seventh or
end
eighth.
Of play on Saturday, I think.
But they're good.
Yeah, they're good.
And I mean, Portsmouth, 1-20 in the league for Sunderland. Portsmouth, similar record. They've played more games, they've got more points, that kind of thing. It's relentless. I mean, that deserves an awful lot of respect. One of my big bosses at ITV is a Portsmouth fan. So we've occasionally, if he's in the office, he's not at Tyne Tees very often. But if he is, we'll have a chat, because obviously he's interested in sport, he's interested in football. Mm-hmm. And now that Sunderland are in the same division as Portsmouth, he comes to me, I'm the sports correspondent, so we talk about the situation. He's always interested in what's going on at Newcastle, that sort of thing. And Portsmouth are loving it at the minute, because they've got a good manager, they're doing very well. And as I said earlier, I wouldn't judge them too much on the last two results, because they've played two good teams.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if we can turn up and make it three tough results in a row, then that would be credit to us more than it would be worry about Portsmouth time for their fans.
I think them saying we've won three games without a win, you know, I think that would be nice to hear them worrying about that.
But to go back, I'm convinced that Ross will see it as a game that he'll go and try and win.
Oh, yeah. It'd be massive. If they get the 3 points, it would really put us in pole position. Especially with them two games in hand. Right, Twitter questions. Jake Collinson This one's probably for me, actually. How long did it take for you to thaw out after the match yesterday? Because you would have went to the warmth of the press box at halftime and stuff as well.
I stayed outside.
Did you?
Well, I was undercover, but I was outside for the whole game.
Did you? Did you not go in?
No.
Why not?
Didn't go in.
The stairs.
The stairs, really? Yeah, it was the stairs.
Like, yeah. Vertical up there.
So once you're up, you don't want to come back down unless you absolutely have to. Really.
It took me, I don't know, the car heaters, isn't it? You get to the car and the heaters take about 10 minutes to go hot, don't they? Probably took me about 20 minutes. Probably got the time tunnel as I was driving home. Took a while. And Chris, you watched it from the comfort of Alaska or something, didn't you?
Yeah, I was in Copenhagen, watching it with me family. Spontaneous Saturday trip to watch the football in Copenhagen. So
as one does.
Yeah, you know what I mean? If it's, the opportunity just came up, so I just decided we'll just quickly nip over. Yeah. Got back just in time for the podcast's dedication for you. So
Yeah. Quick flight over.
Oh, aye.
Up there. Okay, Magnum Golfer. This one's for Simon. Did the journals, that would be you, know how bad it was at the time, having now seen the footage? He's referring to the Netflix documentary, I believe. Has anything shocked you? Maybe that's the...
Well, I should say I'm midway through episode 5. I'm very much enjoying it. I think it's a very good piece of telly and it's very well made. I don't think anything's particularly shocked me. I raised an eyebrow at Martin Bain's meeting with the scouting department. And I'm led to believe there's some stuff coming up which I may raise an eyebrow at to do with Chris Martin and things like that. But it's a strange thing. It's interesting now to watch the Netflix documentary because there's an element of, did that really happen? The whole thing. And while you're covering it as well, that there's always the thought, when someone like Coleman, incidentally, it's funny how everyone instantly fell in love with Chris Coleman. They've shown that on the documentary as well. With someone like him being there, there was always the thought throughout last season that Sunderland will get out of this. They won't get relegated. Something will happen. So all the time you're covering it, there was always that at the back of the mind. And it was only kind of the moment they get relegated, you think, oh my God, this has so obviously been coming for 6 months, hasn't it? And it was just an absolute car crash. In answer to your question, I don't think probably people knew quite how toxically awful it was behind the scenes. And I'm not so much talking about the dressing room, but just the upper echelons of the club and how financially bad it was. I don't know if people actually knew that.
What about Grayson? Because, I mean, I think it's the first episode he does his wonderful pre-season hype team talk where he's talking like this and Sunderland represents working class people.
It is in the sort of a documentary maker, well, any sort of television producer, you have the power to shape the narrative. You have the power to put the message across that you want to get across. I don't particularly think that the Netflix documentary has done Simon Grayson any favours, but that's the way that they chose to edit it. He was always a very nice, very polite man to deal with. I don't want to assassinate him. I don't think it is great for him.
No,
the way it comes across.
And I met Simon Grayson actually once.
He's a nice chap, isn't he?
Yeah, really, really good guy.
I remember that night. He's like, yeah, guess what? I put it in this photo of his mug of Simon Grayson.
Yeah, yeah. Got loads of off the record stuff that I didn't report. Do you think it impacts anybody's ability to get a job? Do you think somebody will watch that who'll go, you know, say someone sacks a manager in League One? I don't know. Bristol Rovers looking for a manager. Simon Grayson's at the top of the list. Do you think they can watch that and go, do you know what, I don't fancy him now?
Joey Barton's a League One manager, so Simon Grayson's be absolutely fine.
But if you were recruiting, in all seriousness?
I would be quite happy looking at Simon Grayson. I wouldn't,
would you?
Like,
after watching the documentary?
Yeah. I would go under the premise that my club's better ran than Sunderland was in that season and think we'll be able to support him a lot better than Martin Bain was. Because as much as it's not really Martin Bain's job to look after the team, he does have to look after Grayson to a certain length. I don't think they really do or did. I think a lot of the managers would say we didn't really have like support, like they all we got the backing of the board and all that, but I don't think they ever actually had help the same way that Jack Ross does with Stuart Donald. If you look at their relationship and the fact he's brought people in with the specific role of helping Jack Ross get his job done properly.
Okay, same question, but Martin Bain, Will he ever get another job in football now?
Oh, I hope not. If I have to watch him make another Nespresso, I'm going to flip.
Bits of it he comes across all right. Bits of it, maybe not so much.
I liked how he did the I'm not really a corporate person. I think he did that whole spiel and I was like, come on, Martin, you are Mr. Corporate Person.
He does love football, doesn't he? I think that's
yes,
the people
who
met him. He genuinely does love football and he does get Sunderland at the same time. But
it was a hellish situation that he was in. It was a really, really bad hand of cards that he was dealt, but he didn't play it very well, did he?
He took over a Premier League team and left a League One.
Exactly.
And he was only there 2 years.
So whilst you can point to all the excuses and extenuating circumstances, ultimately, Martin Bain's time at Sunderland is in nobody's estimation a success, was it?
Adam Baker, similar sort of question, but what do you guys think of the mess the club was in compared to now? Now we've seen it behind closed doors. What do you think? I suppose, what is the difference? What's changed from Netflix Series 1 to what Netflix Series 2 will be like? I think it'll be chalk and cheese.
Everything.
I think everything about it, will Series 2 be controversial?
At the moment, if it follows the path that it's on at the minute, Series 2 will just be a love fest, basically. with featuring Stuart and Charlie and Juan and
I'm going to
Jack.
Take that little like snippet then. It sounds like you're describing an orgy. with Stuart, Charlie and Juan.
You know, having said, because you're right, I don't think people realise quite how bad it was, but what you could say was that it was a bit smelly. There was a bad atmosphere around the club and it just sort of that sort of rotting at the edges and you wonder if, you know, are the floorboards going to go through at any second? And nothing about it felt good or right or fun or healthy last season. And most things about it now feel pretty good, pretty healthy, although the finances is still a battle that is going to be waged for years and years and years to get them properly where they want them to be and that sort of thing. And I know a function of this point is that it's League One and Sunderland therefore win more, but it's fun. And having gone there for many, many years, all the years at the Stadium of Light and some before at Roker Park, certainly the last 5 or 6 years, it's been horrible going there to cover matches and not expecting the home team to win and not expecting it to be a particularly enjoyable experience. And now it is.
Where do you think we would be right now if Ellis kept it?
Oh. 19th in League One.
You think?
I don't know who'd be manager.
Would be in administration.
I don't think he would have thought outside the box and looked for someone like Jack Ross. I think it would have been a 45 to 60 year old lower league jobbing manager, and it would be slowly dying a death, and crowds would have dipped below 15,000.
Horrible, scary. On to slightly more positive things. Graham Field has 3 questions, but first one is, can you recommend a podcast that you enjoy other than Roker Report and our good friends Wise Men Say? So
Roker Report Extra. Boom.
Any without Roker Report or Wise Men Say. Any maybe non-Sunderland podcasts that any of us listen to?
I love basketball, so if you love basketball, The Starters, excellent. That's it.
I very much like Atletico Mints. That's very, very funny indeed. And whilst it is the BBC, and I suppose in some respects I work for the opposition, if I don't listen to it, I'll quite like the Monday Night Football podcast as well, because that's always a very good discussion and they have some very good guests and they get into it, and that's good stuff.
Peter Crouch, I like the Peter Crouch podcast.
Yeah. I haven't heard it. Is it worth it?
Oh, it's a very good listen. Uh-huh. I think Crouchy, I wish he'd done it when he'd retired, because I feel like he holds back on some things. But he's a good listener. He's a funny guy.
Flint off Savin, the ping pong guy, is pretty good as well.
Yeah, I don't listen to that one religiously, but it's on like it's like a backup. You know, if there's nothing left on like a Sunday or something, I'll listen to that one.
It's the Monday Night Club 5 Live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Non-sporting related. There's No Such Thing as a Fish is really good. It's the QI elves, so the people who write the questions for QI. They just sit around a table and bring their favourite fact that they've researched that week.
Nice,
brilliant, it's hilarious.
I only listen to sport podcasts.
Yeah,
very rigid. In
another
my,
good isn't one it? Is My Dad Wrote a Porno, which is
did he?
It's one about this group of people who are friends in uni. You'll have heard a few of them, but one of their dads literally wrote an erotic novel, and nice. He just gets his mates around and they sit and read the novel to each other and then like interject with questions about what's going on.
Like 50 Shades of Grey,
that's very funny as well.
Fair play. That took a different
twist. Very, if you ask for a good podcast, yeah. That's a good podcast.
Back to Sunderland. Fieldo also says, as things stand, we look as though we are going to get promoted. Would you bring a couple of players in during the January transfer window or keep the money until the summer?
Oh, he got a sign in January, I think.
I'm not so sure.
Just a bit threadbare at the moment. It's a couple of players injured.
I think you could stand pat, but I think I can see Oviedo possibly leaving, which will mean they'll probably want to bring in another player.
Well, I think people should be aware that if the club gets a chance to offload more than one of the big earners in January, they will probably do that.
So because that's Catamore, McGeady, Oviedo.
Yeah, Matthews is another one who's still on good money and that kind of thing.
His contract's out at the end of the year, isn't it, Matthews?
They would be very tempted to do that just to lessen the financial burden. If people leave, then yes, absolutely, they need to be replaced. As it stands, I think that the squad will be good enough and the manager will be good enough to manoeuvre that squad about to get them out of this division. And it's the fact that Duncan Watmore's coming back, that touch wood, Charlie Wyke will play a big part for Sunderland in the second half of the season. They've got enough midfielders. Defence, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I think a centre-half or a right-back would do, because then sign a centre-half, it means you've got Flanagan now as cover at right-back, and then sign a right-back, you've got cover at right-back. So,
do you bring Embleton back?
Yes, 100%. I love Embleton. I think he's a fantastic footballer.
Would you not rather he played? Or would you rather have him in and around the squad? Because bring him back, he's on the bench.
I would play Embleton in for those games where Ross obviously decides to rest Maguire for whatever reason every now and then. Embleton to me is the natural replacement. So if we were talking earlier about if you have to have one of Power or Catamole, then you can have Embleton in place of Maguire or Gooch or McGeady. He's sensational. He'd be really good.
It's interesting. Don't forget Ethan Robson either.
He comes back as well. Robson. Yeah,
I've been told the manager likes him as well.
He's a really good player.
I know he was only against Carlisle in the Chequer trade when he scored, but that whole performance up until he went off was excellent. He was really confident on the ball, kept things ticking over, play could go through him and it wouldn't slow us down at all, which is a really important feature in a midfielder.
So we've talked about Elliot Embleton and Ethan Robson, and then put the question to you again, do Sunderland need to bring people in January?
No, probably.
I still think a defender.
Apart from defending. Yeah. I don't think they've got a player in the academy at the minute, a defender who... Well, apart from Hume, but obviously he's still out.
I was going to say a striker as well, but Nelson's on loan at the moment and he could...
He scored a couple of goals.
He could demand attention if he scores a few more.
It's still, you know, the very visible elephant in the corner of the room is still Josh Madger in January and the contract and that sort of thing, because the whole thing changes if Josh Madger leaves the club in January, which at this, as we sit here today, is still a possibility.
I think if Madger isn't signed by... Well, basically, if he doesn't sign a contract either by January or in January, I think he's gone. They'd be silly not to sell him, and I would understand the decision.
That's the unfortunate truth of it, isn't it? That you're quite right. They've got to look after the financial health of the club, and if it comes up and somebody offers 5 million, let's say, I'm not going to argue about the money, but say it's about that figure, and they are told by Josh Madger and his representatives that he's not minded to sign a new contract, they'll probably have to sell him, won't they? But I don't know. I mean, Stuart Donald's been very honest about everything. He's not looked to pull the wool over people's eyes. So when he says on social media that he's hopeful there'll be good news about Josh Madger and Lyndon Gooch, at this point, I think we have to take him at face value, don't we?
I think if Madger... If Stuart Donald believes that Madger and Gooch are going to stay... He must believe it so much that he's putting it on social media, because he's putting his neck on the line. Because if we do get rid of Gooch and Madger, he comes in here in February, then he's going to get grilled about it because we've got it on social
Connor's
media.
Connor's going to be fuming.
But the thing is, though, fans have got it. They've got evidence that he said that they're going to stay. Uh-huh. So if they don't
but
stay...
He's not said they're going to stay. He said he hopes that there'll be good news soon.
Yeah, but he said that they've said they want to stay.
Yeah. You've got to think as well for... Stuart Donald, like Jack Ross's ambition as well. And I think we were talking about like signing players, stuff like that. Jack Ross obviously has, I don't think he has any desire to sign, especially. I think he's pretty content with his squad. But Stuart Donald will look at offers coming in for players, and you think players like Catamol as well, if an offer came in for Catamol, and obviously Ross really, really likes Lee Catamol, Stuart Donald will sit to himself, we can't afford to pay his wages. A, selling him would be great. We could do a lot of that money. But B, he is playing an important part of the season. The manager really likes him, so we can afford to keep him. Let's keep him. Maybe he'd give the decision to somebody else to make because he would find either way. It's tough to say where Stuart's head's at, because, you know, when he's spoken in here, he has said a few times that, like, I do want to make sure the best interests of the football club are at heart, and part of that is finance, but the other part is also on the pitch.
Strategically, I think if they can get away without a great expenditure in January, I think that's the way to go, because, as I say, I think that the squad is strong enough for the division that Sunderland are in. And strategically, I think keeping powder dry for the summer, when hopefully Sunderland will be looking to plan for a championship campaign, they will be shopping for different players at that point.
Yeah.
And players who will cost more money.
If we can get a player who comes available in January, who screams to you, championship player, and will definitely be in the squad next season, then I think it's a no-brainer to go and sign him and spend the money. But I think that's the only reason you would do it. You wouldn't sign another cover at any position, I don't think. You wouldn't sign another Glenn Leuvens for centre-half.
No.
You know what I mean? You'd need to sign somebody who is going to be straight into the first team.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the key part.
Let's say Maggio doesn't sign it. What is the value? How much does Sunderland get? Moisa went for $3.5 million. He was a League Two striker last year, older.
So it's more than that. I think, since I was last in on a podcast, film training, and we weren't actually filming the shooting practice, but watched them do the shooting practice. My God, he's finishing. He's red hot. He really is. I think he took his goal so well yesterday.
Oh, that's amazing.
The finish, I know the keeper kind of made a little bit of a Horlicks of it, but it was a good finish. It was the little, that inbuilt awareness he had to do the little stutter step and sit the defender down rather than take the shot on
I
first time.
So good.
That's proper tradecraft, that. That's excellent. He's already way over £5 million for me in terms of value. And on potential alone, strangely, because he'd be a player coming out of League One, it probably is a single-figure number.
Yeah.
If he was in a championship and doing what he's doing in the championship, it's double digits already. He's got virtually limitless potential at his age. His finishing, which is the hardest part of the game, seems to come to him absolutely naturally. Yes, hold-up play, yes, blah, 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 yes. But players can be taught that.
Yeah.
The bit that you can't be taught, he's very, very good.
Well, look at Sinclair, who's better at hold-up play, better at running the channels. Put him in front of goal, he's got about a 1 in 10 chance of putting on target. Nothing against him, he's just not a natural finisher.
Yeah.
Madge, in and around the box, you put the ball to him 20 yards out, he's got a good chance of scoring.
I still believe that it's better for Josh Madge to stay at Sunderland till the end of the season, because he's in the groove, he'll get games, he'll hopefully have a good football memory of achieving something at the end of the season. I also wonder whether there might be a bit of a gentleman's agreement to be had with a 1 or 2 year contract extension, and the understanding that if and when the right offer comes in the summer, then the club won't stand in his way. But I think the example of his mate at Swansea, it's not really worked so far for Asoro, has it? And the grass is not necessarily always greener. If I was him and if I was his agent, I would say, you've got time on your side, it's going well at Sunderland, stay where you are for the next 6 months.
And so don't go up, put a clause in his contract.
Look, yeah, undoubtedly,
put a clause
of course.
In his contract. If you say to him in January, right, sign the deal, but if we don't go up, we'll let you go for £3 million.
That sort of thing, that's fine. I mean, he's clearly capable of playing way higher than the level he's playing at the moment. Yeah.
It's a unique position, because I was just looking there to try and find a player of a similar age who's moved recently. And the first one that sprung to mind was Natty Wells, because he played for Bradford in League One and he got a move. But he's now 25, so he's completely irrelevant. And then I thought Patrick Bamford, he's also 25. He went for $8 million this summer, but you can't really compare him. You know what I mean?
There is a comparison.
There isn't a comparison. All the good young players are locked up in Chelsea's academy. You know what I mean? They're all, I think most of them actually are. So have a 19-year-old who's actually performing and doing as well as he is. I can't really see how you can.
I know. I mean, look, as Sunderland fans, it's not just Sunderland fans. It's every club who isn't Liverpool or Manchester United or Manchester City or that sort of thing. There is, with Madge, there's an element of enjoy him while you can. because he's not going to be at Sunderland for his whole career.
I think Sunderland have to go back-to-back promotions and immediately be a very good Premier League team for Josh Madge's timeline to really fit with ours.
Yeah, Shaqiri, 2 goals. Liverpool 1-3-1.
We'll just put a real life date and time on when this podcast is being recorded.
I was just looking there. And I was.
He started on the bench as well.
Yeah, he came on.
Super sub.
Yeah, Stoke City.
Super Swiss sub.
Yeah. Are we all done there? Are we all done on Madge?
Aye, I think if Madge leaves, we need to get loads and loads of money.
Right.
Need a lot of money, and they need to spend a fair bit of it on getting in a striker who'll score goals.
Tom Hoops. There we are. He's the plan.
Or Kiefer Moore.
Oh, Kiefer Moore would be brilliant.
I like
Kiefer Moore's probably a better option because he's championship standard. Speaking of contracts, Adam Matthews, contract's up at the end of the season. I think.
Pay him whatever he asks for. I love him.
But less than what he's on right now.
But less than he's on right now, yeah.
What do we think, Adam Matthews? Surely, do you wait till the end of the season? There's not going to be that much interest in him, is there?
It's a difficult situation, isn't it? Because he signed when the club was different.
I think, bought him.
At a different level. And so his contract is that of a Premier League footballer. And if you're saying his contract's up at the end of the season, Sunderland might offer him a contract, but it won't be 50% of what he's on at the minute. So what do you do? It's a difficult situation.
Yeah. If a bigger club comes in and offers him the same money, then go ahead. Fair play. Yeah.
Let's be honest. Who is? Like, who's going to offer Adam Matthews? You say he's on 15. Who's going to offer him 15 grand a week?
Oh, Nottingham Forest. That's a Forest signing all over that.
15k a week on a League One player. I think teams would be scared of him because A, he's had injury problems, but B, in the championship last year, he was poor.
Yeah.
So I think the best contract offer he'll get will be off Sunderland.
Maybe, but I think it's a difficult one for Sunderland because it's an odd thing to get somebody coming into a contract negotiation and say, well, there's the offer, and it's literally peanuts compared to the one that you've just finished.
I think it's all
but that's the world that they live in now.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of personal decision for Matthews. Obviously, he'll have family and things like that. Yeah. Like, is it worth taking the cut to keep my family settled, or do I look at maybe moving? Like, if anyone does make an offer of anywhere near, if it turns out another club makes an offer that's only marginally better than the one we've made him, then he might well just say, like, well, it's actually not worth it for the sake of that difference.
There's one other point, because we're on, sort of on this contracts transfer-y stuff. What happens if a reasonable Championship or Scottish Premier League team comes in for McGeady? What does Sunderland do then?
I think...
See you later.
Yeah, I think it depends how much he's on. I don't actually have an idea of what he's on, but I'm going to presume it's 20 up.
Well, he was Grayson's marquee signing, wasn't he? Coming into the Championship, he's, you know, his CV is international football and top divisions and that kind of thing. And as we've said, his skill set mean he stands out like a sore thumb in League One. But they've also grown to rely on him because sometimes when things aren't working quite as well or flowing quite as well, he's the person who can break the game. And he's become very, very, very important to that team. And I think... I'm reluctant to say it would be a bigger thing to lose him than to lose Madger, but I think it would be almost as big for Sunderland were McGeady not to be there at the end of January.
I think from McGeady's point of view, there isn't a single team of Sunderland's stature where he will be the main man like he is here. And I'm totally presuming, but I think just watching the way he plays and his body language, I think he likes that sort of responsibility. He likes being the man. He likes taking the shots and the penalties and... I think when Jack Ross gave him the captain's armband, it was a bit of a masterstroke. He went and played a blinder. I think he loves that type of love and attention, and I don't think there's another club where he'll get that.
I think he loves being the dog's bollocks, doesn't he? He loves it.
All right.
Well, it's been a thing that the manager said a couple of times, and you think, well, footballers, they must all enjoy it. It'd be brilliant. I wish I was a footballer and that kind of thing. But it pointedly has been said about McGeady that he's really enjoying his football. He obviously didn't last year. He's had an interesting career, McGeady. Lots of points at which you wonder whether he did enjoy it. Yeah, if you remember, he had a very strange move to Russia,
Moscow,
that kind of thing. When he was the dog's bollocks, as you say, at Celtic. He was the wunderkind. Then he had that strange move, and then he's been around a few places. Everton was like kind of it was all right, wasn't it? There was bits where it was good, not so good. How much has he ever enjoyed it? He's past 30 now. He is enjoying it, obviously. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a lot to be said for that. But equally, what he'll be thinking in the back of his mind and what his agent will be thinking is he's probably got one move left in him. And that could be a problem for Sunderland in January.
Paul McElduff says, do you think Netflix will release the second series? And yes, they are, that'll probably be released December next year.
Announced, hasn't it? It's well, the happening.
Well, it is happening because they've been recording me. And
They've kept filming. Yeah. So the Netflix crew has been there all the way through this season. So the plan obviously is, yes, to do it.
Which Stuart Donald said on our podcast, they've been in his house and that, haven't they?
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. I don't know how Netflix's sort of commissioning thing works. But
a lot of the crew who did it, I was told.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm not surprised. I think they've probably got more people that they trusted in, things like that. But it's an interesting one for them because, I mean, Football 73, they do a lot of stuff overseas as well in America. So their timetable, they must have probably taken some time out to come and focus on this. That's interesting in itself. I know they're fans and the local lads as well, the ones who are commissioning it. But Netflix, I don't think they'll particularly care when it's done and ready to go, because as long as this one performs well, the second one's a no-brainer for them.
Yeah.
So, you saw it with the release of this one. It didn't really matter when it came out.
How
it was just sort of when you're ready.
Do you think this is going to be to a non-Sunderland fan?
I don't know really. I think it's a more interesting documentary than the Manchester City one.
That's very. I enjoyed the Man City one, but it's vanilla.
It was incredible. It was supermarket own brand vanilla as well. It wasn't even particularly tasty vanilla. Well, the problem was the narration, the Ben Kingsley thing. Don't get me wrong. I've only seen about three episodes of that. The bits with Pep were electric.
I love watching Pep Guardiola.
Big fan of Pep Guardiola. And the bits, the dressing room stuff and that kind of thing, fabulous. But it was a corporate brochure, wasn't it? Whereas Sunderland's at least a bit more real, a bit more visceral.
I think you can tell that Sunderland didn't necessarily sign it off. Like, I don't think Sunderland were ever given it to say, right, okay, well, you take everything off here. I think the Fulwell guys have literally just done they've done what they want and they've released it. And
you've got, it's a different perspective. I think the Man City one was all about Pep Guardiola and the way he operates and watching this, you know, generational coaching talent coach one of the, you know, a generational squad of players. Whereas with Sunderland, it was, let's have a look at this community and this city and what it means to the people who are involved on a day-to-day basis. It wasn't about Simon Grayson. It wasn't about any of the players. It was about Sunderland, the city, not, you know, like how the football club affects it. Whereas, I mean, Manchester City is not as big a part of the city as Sunderland is to Sunderland. So it was, they had to pick a character and a storyline, and that was, you know, the maverick Guardiola.
They would have been slightly forced down that route as well, which I think is good work for them. But obviously, they would have asked the question, can we have dressing room access? And obviously, Grayson, I know because I remember Coleman being asked about it. Coleman wouldn't have him in the dressing room. And presumably, Grayson said the same thing.
They were very accommodating in every other aspect, but not that one.
Uh-huh. So if you haven't got that, then it sort of forces you slightly to think outside the box a bit. But I think they've done a very good job with that, because I think it's a good piece of television.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly, I hadn't even thought about them being in the dressing room.
No, they're not.
Yeah, which...
Well, it's the first question you ask.
Done well.
Of course, you want to be in there. You want inner sanctum. Yeah. You want everything. But most managers are not going to...
I think everything that happens in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. It is.
I would love to see Jack Ross working the same way that they showed Pep Guardiola working, because I think they do. I think they'll have a lot of similar processes, but obviously their like opinions and approaches will be different. But I just like Jack Ross tactically. I'm fascinated by watching the way he sets his teams up and that, because he never settles. He never has like a stubborn, you know,
is
way
that
of playing.
That Jack Ross and Pep Guardiola are the same level.
They're the same mindset.
I like his substitutions. I like Jack Ross's. I'm always interested by his substitutions. Yeah. The Maggio one yesterday was interesting. I can't remember the game, but I like when he doesn't do proper football man, Sam Allardyce, David Moyes type substitutions. If you're winning, you put another defender on. If you're losing, you put another attacker on. There've been times where he's chasing a game and he's brought Oviedo on. He's brought a left back on because he's more creative. There's been times where he's been leading in a game and rather than shut it down, he's taken a defensive midfielder off and put another winger on because he wants to change where the game's being played. And I'm fascinated by that stuff.
He knows the ins and outs of every single player's strengths, so not just his own, but the opposition. And there's one clip of on the Coach's Voice YouTube channel where he's talking about St Mirren, and they in their promotion season, they won a huge like top versus second game against Dundee, I think it was. And they won it 3-0 in the end, and he was breaking down everything he did and why he did it all, and talking about the different players he had and asking one guy out of position. It's just the way he talked about it, and it's like, if this is the guy who's handling Sunderland's game plan and he's given the same level of attention, then we're in very, very safe hands.
His post-match stuff after the Barnsley game was fascinating because he said, he was very upfront about it. He said he set the team up to be quite loose and he gave McGeady, if you remember, a slightly different role that day and absolved him of too much defensive responsibility. And he said he knew that that would leave them open. But he thought the way that Barnsley play, he essentially, and he won't do this every week, but on that occasion, he basically backed his team to score more than Barnsley. Mm-hmm. If he made it, he made the game open and he thought his players would be better than Barnsley's.
I love that. That's just like, to me, that is what that's the team I want to be supporting. A guy who just goes like, right, let's just go for it. Like, I would have loved to have been like Blackpool fan in that Ian Holloway season, because even though they lost every game, it would have been hell of fun to do, you know what I mean? Like, scoring like three or four.
Not a good run. Right, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, there's one final question asking about why the documentary didn't focus as much on Jack Rodwell. But I am not at that point, so I can't comment. I don't know if you've seen the Jack
Rodwell. Never there, was he?
Exactly. Yeah. You just pick on what you pick on. I mean, they went into it expecting one thing. They got something entirely different. And I think, Chris, as you've said that, he didn't do now.
Exactly. So, it's just boring. Why would you focus on Jack Rodwell? He never played. He was injured and he was crap when he did play. Why would
he
you...
scored?
Oh!
Got beat, like, I can't remember the game. I think it was Sheffield United. He scored. Right, that pretty much wraps it up. On Wednesday, we have Phil Bardsley, which is done by Graham, the extra podcast host.
Casino.
Yeah. Paolo De Canio as well. I'm sure you're going to mention. And next Saturday, we're recording on Saturday because the university is closed. So we are having to move our recording date to after the game. And we're doing that from...
The King's Arms in Deptford.
No, it's not in Deptford. It's in...
It's near Deptford. They know what I mean if I say Deptford. Yeah. The one that's before the saltgrass. I'm going to Copenhagen to watch the game and then I'm flying back over to the King's Arms to do the podcast.
Do you get that really fast plane as well?
Yeah. I actually get a tunnel there.
A tunnel?
Yeah.
A tunnel wouldn't be as quick, really.
Parasite.
People who watch the game from Denmark like me will know what I mean when I say I get a tunnel.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Any bears in there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll record on Saturday. I presume that'll be released on Sunday morning. See who gets the most drunk. Actually, I won't be drinking because I've got the car.
We should invite Charlie Meffin to the podcast next week, shouldn't we? Sit with us in the King's Arms.
Probably the game. So thanks, Simon, for coming on. And
cheers, always a pleasure, boys.
Yeah, and we'll catch you on the 6:30 news. 6 o'clock, 6:30? What time?
6 to 6:30.
You're six probably about 20 past.
Jeff Brown's 6:30.
So, yeah, it's all the same. I mean, you do the same thing, don't you? So. You clash with the Simpsons on Channel 4. It's a tough battle.
Yeah.
Does everyone in your family watch you?
No.
They're watching the Simpsons on Channel 4, man.
Yeah.
I've got two daughters and they couldn't be less interested in watching telly on television. Really couldn't be.
Are they interested in football?
They're not interested in it, but they're not massively interested.
Fair enough. It's funny enough, only my brother listens to this podcast. Nobody else does.
My dad says he does, but I have no idea if he does. He never asks me about it. He goes, oh, how did the podcast go? And I was like, oh, it's good, I'll listen to it. And then he never like has any follow-up questions. It's like, was there nothing that you wanted to query
God,
or anything
Chris
I said that you were
really
happy with?
Shit on the podcast. God, I wish they wouldn't have him on.
Collective sigh on Twitter when people hear see my name on the tweet. Sorry, boys.
If you could see me now, hope that I'm making you proud.
Yeah, so shipyards.
Belay port.
Buy it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.